We're in the higher training of wisdom. And this, you know, the core of the higher training in wisdom is going to be the four foundations or four establishments of mindfulness. But as with everything, there's a lot of stuff you need to learn and practice before that, so that when you do that, it will be successful. So the beginning part of this chapter is talking a lot about mindfulness and also introspective awareness and what their role is it starts out with ethical conduct. As you develop those two qualities, practicing the precepts and ethical conduct, then it helps you when you start needing them, when you develop serenity, because they're very important for developing concentration. And then we need them to do the wisdom too, because they're the mindfulness, you know, in the higher training of mindfulness when we're doing the four establishments, their wisdom, mindfulness has to be together with wisdom. Okay, so mindfulness has a different function in each of the three higher trainings, yeah? And you develop it gradually in that kind of way, okay? So this kind of thing is important because we all know that we all want to do the highest practices, right? Yeah, yeah, because we're all the most intelligent, advanced students. And so let's just jump in and do the highest things. But when we don't have the foundation and we can't do the basic stuff, then, you know, you can't do the higher stuff either. And the basic stuff, we shouldn't be tricked by the word basic. Yeah, because the basic stuff is actually not so easy. And it takes time, and it takes patience, and we need to develop it. Like just this basic kind of mindfulness and introspective awareness. You know, keeping those as you're doing different things during the day. Is that easy? Yeah? Is monitoring your speech, you know, and what you're saying and why you're saying it, easy? When you walk from one place to the other, are you aware of what's going on in your mind? When you sit down to do your practices, are you focused on the practices, or are you, as soon as you start reciting something you know by heart, do you start wondering, okay, what else can I think about while I'm blindly reciting this? Yeah, I'm revealing all the, I don't know what, but what we do when we're supposed to be doing other things, right? Yeah. Okay, so I thought it might be good to just go back and review a little bit because we stopped right in the middle of this section about introspective awareness. Okay, so just a little bit about mindfulness, okay? First of all, the importance of mindfulness and introspective awareness. Shantideva says, to those who wish to guard their minds, I make this appeal with palms joined. You must use every effort to employ both mindfulness and introspective awareness. Okay, and then you're going to ask me about doing the practices. Yeah, we'll get there. I was going to do another verse, and then I did remember that we have to do those. Yeah, okay. The other verse, this one you know by heart, Tonglei Sangpo. In brief, whatever you are doing, ask yourself, what's the state of my mind? With constant mindfulness and introspective awareness, accomplish others' good. Okay, this is the practice of bodhisattvas. So there in the bodhisattva conduct, the mindfulness and introspective awareness are to be used in the bodhicitta practice and in practicing the six perfections. Okay, so it's different how you use these two mental factors in different things. So right now, yeah, we're going to use mindfulness to remember the visualization, yeah, for taking refuge. Do you know what you're supposed to be visualizing? Okay, you have the three jewels in front. Who's right in front of you in the visualization? Yeah, people that we find difficult. They're right in front of us, between us and the Buddha. So we can't ignore the people we find difficult, yeah. And then we're surrounded by all other sentient beings, and we're leading them in taking refuge. Leading them. I take refuge. Yeah. So we each have a different way of leading refuge. Okay. And, And sometimes it's a bit humorous. And sometimes it's a bit driving you crazy. Yeah. But in your visualization, it's melodious. That's the nice thing about visualization. You can make everything nice. Yeah. Okay, so let's do the visualization. Prepare our mind to take refuge and generate bodhicitta. Let's cultivate our motivation. So we've all heard many times about the disadvantages of our self-centered thought, how it causes us problems in this life, how it lies behind the creation of negative karma that affects our future lives, how it is a huge hindrance to generate bodhicitta and thus to practice the bodhisattva path. So we can see those big pitfalls of self-centeredness. But to deal with our self-centeredness, we have to work with it every day and in the small ways that it seems to arise every day, and how those small ways our self-centered thought arises can, without little, very little effort, become huge ways in which it creates problems. Okay, so let's have a strong determination to identify and then to oppose the self-centered thought, and in its place to remember the benefits of cherishing others and the joy that cherishing others brings us, because we've seen the kindness of others and we want to give to them. We want to contribute. And so when we're successful in doing that, then we feel quite happy. Okay, and then to expand that thought to benefit others so that we look far in the distance and are determined to practice until we attain full awakening so we can be of the most effective benefit to all living beings. So let's make that our motivation for this evening. Okay, so I was thinking this week of another antidote to self-centeredness that Lama Zopa taught many years ago. At the same time, I think I've told you before about imagining our self-centeredness here and when we have pain or misfortune, giving the pain or misfortune to the self-centeredness and saying, you're the one who created the cause for this. Here, the result is yours too. Okay. So that's one way that Rinpoche talked. And I think in the same Dharma talk, he talked about this other way, which also I find quite helpful when I remember it. Okay. Which is, you know how there's gazillions of things that happen every day that irritate you, that you don't like, that should be done this way and people do them that way. Yeah, do you know what I'm talking about? You have a few of these, you know, complaints, yeah, about, you know, the people around you and what they're doing and they're not doing and, okay? And when you stop and you look, it's like, well, why am I so irritated with this? Well, it has to do with our laws of the universe, yeah? And one of the chief ones being everything should happen the way I want it to happen. And everybody should do what I think they should do, and they should not do what I think they shouldn't do. Okay? Those are some of the three big hits from the medley of the self-centered thought, right? Okay, so when one of those happens, okay, you think things should be done. You think when you vacuum the floor, you should go from front to back and then back to front, making a line in each direction so that you get every single micro whatever it is of dirt there without missing one spot, right? Let's say that that's the way you think a floor should be vacuumed. I imagine there are some people here who think like that. Yeah, yeah. There's other people, yeah, in my room. Yeah, when I come back after Venerable Pema has cleaned it every week, there's half of a lotus flower on the carpet. Yeah, because she vacuums and makes a lotus flower. Okay. If I vacuum, it's like a picture of modern art. Okay. So, okay, so if you have your way of how you think it should be done, let's say the linear way, up and back and up and back, okay, because that way you don't do two parts twice and waste your time, but you make sure to get every little spot, not to miss any. Okay, so that's the way you think it should be done. And you walk in and somebody's doing it a different way. Yeah. Maybe they're making lotus flowers. Maybe they're doing modern art with the, you know, however the pattern is when you vacuum. Okay. And they're doing modern art and they left out that space there. Yeah. And there was this corner over here that they didn't get. And they went very quickly over the main part, but it didn't pick up everything. And they should have gone at least 3 or 4 more times over that and gotten up everything. Okay. And you're sitting there watching this person. Why aren't they vacuuming right? I know how to vacuum right, how to do it most efficiently, yeah, how to do it most completely so the carpet is the cleanest. Why aren't these people doing that? I've announced it in the stand-up meeting and taught everybody how to do it. They know, but they don't do that. It's driving me crazy. Yeah, because then the vacuum cleaner is on because they're going over all sorts of spaces, you know, and they're even doing the walls, but the walls don't need to be vacuumed. But the floor, they're missing all these little spots. And I am just so exasperated. Okay, anybody ever been in that room for mood for something that happened at the Abbey? No, never. Okay, yeah, you're the library and the books all behave, huh? and you're getting revved up about this, yeah, to realize, why am I revved up? It's my self-centered thought trying, it wants to enforce its rules of the universe on the universe, and it's not being successful, and I could go and start reprimanding the person who is vacuuming and giving them my wise advice about how to vacuum properly again. But that's just going to start something because they'll look at me and they'll say, two words. What do they say?
Yes, but.
Yes, but. And tell you how they think it should be vacuumed. Okay, you know, yes, but. Okay, so here, the way to practice. Your self-centered attitude is upset. It's agitated. It's mad. And you go, that's good. I'm glad my self-centered attitude is upset. Yeah? Because it creates so many problems for me. And now this situation is pointing out, you know, one of the problems my self-centeredness creates for me. Yeah? The problem of wanting to correct people, but knowing that it's not going to go the way I want it to do, and thus feeling frustrated. Okay? So I'm glad my self-centered thought is frustrated. I'm glad it's not getting what it wants. Yeah. What do you think about that as a technique? Do you like that? Or do you... How can you say I'm not getting what my self-centered thought wants? My self-centered thought is right. It should get what it wants. You know, maybe you don't like this technique because your self-centered thought fights back. It says, yes, but. Yeah, yes, but I have a good reason for why I should correct these people. And they should know that they should listen to me because I know how to vacuum better than anybody else. Yeah. So your self-centered thought may have some resistance. And again, you turn towards it and you say, I'm so glad you're miserable. I'm so glad. Yeah, you caused me so much problem. I'm glad that you're miserable now. Yeah. It's a really nice thing. You know, I like this technique because when I practice it, I stop, my mind stops complaining about the situation that I'm aggravated about. Yeah. And, in, you know, because I'm complaining now about the self-centered thought, I'm not complaining about how people are vacuuming anymore. So it helps me just drop the original thing that was driving me nuts, which is some small thing that I'm not going to remember in a week, but it seems of monumental importance at that time. Yeah. And so, yeah. Okay, self-centeredness, yeah. I'm glad. Yeah. Just sit there with it. Be miserable. Yeah, because, okay, and you have to do this with a very clear awareness that you and your self-centered thought are not one and the same. So you're not blaming yourself and telling yourself that you're a jerk, okay? You're looking at the self-centered thought. You put it right over here. You can even imagine what it looks like, okay? And you give the, you know, you say, yeah, go ahead, suffer. You're the cause of it, not me. Yeah, it's not bothering me, it's bothering you. Okay, are you getting what I'm saying? Yeah, so I like this way of doing it, you know, too, because like I said, it takes my mind off of whatever it was complaining about. Yeah, because we all know that our complaints can, you know, especially when we know best. Yeah, because we know best, don't we? And other people just don't listen. Yeah, your expression looks so pained. Yeah, because your self-centeredness just does, it doesn't do what you want it to do.
Nobody else does either.
But. Yeah. Yeah. Oh, you have that problem too? Okay, so that's a little bit of introduction. Yeah. Okay, now mindfulness. So our mindfulness is usually on how somebody else is vacuuming, you know, how they should wash the dishes, how they should label the containers of the leftovers. Do you have a microscope so I could read the writing? This doesn't look like, this looks like condensed hieroglyphics, you know? I don't even try and read what's written on those little blue tags. Does anybody else? You, yeah, you can read it? Oh, very good. Yeah.
I write them and I can't read them.
Yeah. So there's all these things, you know, our mindfulness, yeah, we put on things like this, okay, our rules of the universe. We're very mindful of our rules of the universe, yeah, okay, and, but that's not what we should be mindful of. Yeah. So when we're practicing ethical conduct, and at the beginning of the path, and this is not so easy, we are keeping in mind being aware of our precepts and being aware of our ethical values. So we have these in mind, yeah, so that when we act according to our values, we act according to our precepts. Okay. If we do that, then we don't have very much to confess at posada time. If we don't do that, then we may have a lot to confess. Yeah. Or we may Yeah, let's just leave it like that. Okay, so to keep aware of our values and our precepts. And then what introspective alertness does is it checks. Yeah, okay. Yeah, what am I doing? I'm walking from point A to point B, and it's springtime, and remember a few days ago there were all the little worms dropping from the trees? Yeah. And it's like, oh, yeah, this is the time of year when that happens. Yeah, so I don't want to hurt any of those worms. I'm going to keep my eyes open and walk carefully there. Or maybe I should just avoid that whole area and go around. Yeah. So the introspective awareness keeps track of, you know, what your body is doing. Okay. So which means that your mind should be tracking also what your body is doing. You know you're walking from A to B, then you know that you don't want to hurt any of the little worms that are dropping from the trees. Yeah. And so your concentration is on that and weaving your way till you get to the kitchen back door with a few worms and who knows what else crawling on you. Okay. But that you practice it that way. Yeah. When you drive, you have to practice mindfulness, you know the rules of the road, you know, pay attention to what's around you, and introspective awareness, checking and making sure that you're driving correctly. In one of the car rides that we took, yeah, I'm going to see if you had the same, if you remember this car ride, the one that I do. Okay, we were driving about 2 hours from one place to the other, and the person who was driving, very nice woman, she was a doctor, okay? But she is talking to the person in the passenger seat while she's driving. And, you know, she's explaining her points, and she uses her hands a lot to explain her points, you know. And she also looks at the person in the passenger seat. And I'm in the back seat going, Namo Gurvya, Namo Buddhaya, Namo, you know. Because she, you know, she took both hands off the wheels repeatedly, and we're on the highway going, you know, 100 kilometers, more than 100 kilometers an hour. Yeah, did you notice that?
We were having a discussion on death.
Yeah, you sure were having a discussion on death. Yeah. And this was going on, and you know, I couldn't say anything. First of all, I couldn't get a word in edgewise, but also, you know, it wouldn't be so polite. And I thought that the other person in the passenger seat would say something, but no. Yeah. So in that situation, you know, if she were using mindfulness, remembering, I need to keep my eyes on the road, you know, and I'm driving here, and this is where, you know, where we're going and everything. And then introspective awareness, are my hands on the wheel? Because a lot of times her hands weren't, both hands were off the wheel. Are my eyes on the road? Or am I looking there? Or occasionally at the scenery on this side, there was something to see. Yeah, especially when we started going up the canyon and the windy roads. Then she looked that way, you know, see. Well, yeah. So, wonderful, very nice person. But, you know, the mindfulness and introspective awareness were not present. Okay, so that's a very gross example. But this is really asking us in our daily life to be aware of what's going on in our mind. Yeah. And because what's very interesting is when we're not aware, yeah, you may be doing your recitations, you may be walking from place to place, but what your mind is doing, yeah, sometimes you're ruminating about something that happened, how that person is vacuuming the floor or isn't vacuuming it, or maybe you're planning the next rota, yeah. Because you got to plan it sometime, and when you're driving, it's as good a time as the next. Or, you're doing your recitations, and you're thinking of that phone call. You know, it's, what is it? Mother's Day is coming up, isn't it? Yeah, so what am I going to say to my mom? Or I just spoke to my mom, or I don't have a mom anymore. Or whatever, you know, and you're thinking about that. Meanwhile, you know, life is going by and we're out to lunch. Yeah. And again, you know, you do that for a while and then the bell at the end of the meditation session rings. Okay, so you can see this is not so easy, is it? To be aware of what body, speech, and mind. Yeah. And then also, how many times when we are aware, do we find ourselves saying something and we have half of the sentence out, and then our mind goes, be quiet. Just don't say the rest of that sentence. It's gonna agitate the situation. And you know, okay, it's good that you had that awareness halfway through saying something nasty to somebody. It would have been better if we had been able to catch that before we do start the sentence. And it would be good if after we recognize that we're saying something like that, to be able to stop mid-sentence. Yeah. But I don't know about you. Sometimes I'm in the middle of saying it and I go, children, don't say this. And I keep on saying it. Anybody else? Yeah? Okay, so this here we can see why we need mindfulness and introspective awareness. Okay, now. Okay, so then, there's the three types of non-introspective awareness. So this is one of the 20 auxiliary afflictions when you study Lohrig. Okay, so whenever it has non-this, non-that, it doesn't just mean the opposite of that, okay? It doesn't mean just not having that. It means the opposite. Okay. Like there's one mental factor. What is it? Non-cruelty. So, non-cruelty. It's not just, you know, I'm not being cruel to anybody right now, but given the chance, I will be. Non-cruelty is compassion. So it's a positive mental factor that we want to cultivate. Okay, so non-introspective awareness isn't just we're sleeping, so of course we don't have introspective awareness. It's, you know, the opposite of that, you know, where we have introspective awareness about non-virtuous things. And so we're creating negative karma. Okay, so there's three types of non-introspective awareness. Okay, the first one is the one that accompanies wrong views. Okay, so you say, there's a soul. I'm sure there's a soul, and I can prove there's a soul because we need the soul to carry the karma. If there's not something permanent in the person, then there's nothing that's going to carry the karma. Yeah? And so, you know, I say, yes, there's a permanent soul. Okay? So my non-introspective awareness is quite aware of that at that time, but it's a non-virtuous object. Okay, it's a wrong view. It was very interesting in the retreat that I led in Germany at the retreat center. It was the title of it was Realizing the Profound View, and the students in it were mostly people. I mean, I think all of people who had studied before. So we had a lot of fun. And there was one guy who had, I just met him on that visit, and he was introduced to me as somebody who's studying all the time, who really loves to study. But this guy, you know who I'm talking about.
Einstein.
Yeah?
Einstein,
yes. Yes, I nicknamed him Einstein, yeah, because he knew everything. But he, you know, he was really sure, you know, really presenting the article, the argument for a permanent self. Yeah. And then Venerable Jampa told me that he asked the same questions to every Geshe, you know. She's not sure why. If he's seeking clarification, or if he just wants, you know, because sometimes it can be very helpful to ask a number of wise people the same question to get different perspectives. But he was, you know, really intent on supporting that argument. Yeah. So I don't know. But if he really says that, then, you know. That's the non-introspective awareness. So that's one kind. The second kind is the non-introspective awareness that hinders development of reliable analytical wisdom because it misunderstands the object. Okay? Boy, misunderstands. How often do we misunderstand things? Yeah? Somebody says, makes some remark, they're joking, but we take it seriously. We think what they're saying is serious. Yeah? Yeah, so many things like that. You know, somebody makes some innocent remark, a remark they consider to be innocent, and we're going, why are they saying that? You know, the situation wasn't like that. No, why are they complaining? Why are they complaining about why this person's vacuuming the floor and it should be up and down? They were vacuuming it up and down. So two people seeing the same situation very differently. This doesn't happen, does it? Yeah, not around here. We all see every situation exactly as it is because everything is objectively existent out there, right? Right? Okay. So when so-and-so did this and that, oh, we knew he had a bad intention. We know, because we saw him do that, and we know bad intention. Ooh, ooh, ooh. Yeah? And then you go and you say, okay, so-and-so, you know, I saw you do this and that, and I know that you were really doing that, you know, because you wanted to mingle in somebody else's business or you wanted to annoy somebody. I know you did that deliberately. And that person goes, what are you talking about? Yeah. You know, And you say, oh, well, I'm talking about when you were talking to so-and-so last Friday at 3 o'clock. And they go, no, at 3 o'clock last Friday, I was doing something else. In other words, two people see the same situation. Just the details are different. Yeah? What role does introspective awareness play in that? Yeah? Because introspective awareness is together with how we interpret things. And there can be one situation, like the one I love to give about when Zsopa went down to her future in-laws, yeah, and the fiancé didn't stop what she was doing and come talk to her, yeah, and she was furious. And I bet if you had talked to the fiancé and said, you know, why didn't you go and greet your future mother-in-law when she came, she would have said something to the effect of, I didn't see her. Yeah? Or, you know, I thought maybe I saw her out of the corner of my eyes, but I was involved in a really difficult conversation with somebody that I couldn't break off in the middle. You know, so people seeing the same, they interpret things totally different. Yeah. One person says, oh, she's so rude. And the other person said, no, I just didn't see her come. Yeah. So this happens all the time, doesn't it? Yeah, and how we misinterpret the same thing. Yeah, I gave an example of it at the SDD. Yeah, my little thing of, you know, they're being misogynistic, and from that person's viewpoint, probably not. Although I wonder. I think maybe, no, when I thought about it, you know, they were busy doing something. I can understand they don't want to be interrupted. Yeah. And anyway, is it my business if somebody said something misogynistic to me? Is that my business? It is? No, it's not my business. It's their business. They're the one who said it. They're the one who believed that. Yeah, I don't need to get bent out of shape because of this. Even though I was like quite bent out of shape. You know, I got myself straightened out after a while. Okay. But, you know, to use our introspective awareness in a way that creates virtue instead of misinterpreting, projecting motivations onto other people. And this is really at the root of a lot of problems, isn't it? We read minds, don't we? We know somebody else's motivation. We know they don't like us. Yeah, it's not that they're tired and they need to go to bed. It's they don't like us, and that's why they're not smiling and doing this and that. Yeah, so we think that we know people's motivations. In fact, we're sure we know their motivations. Yeah, and we don't. But it's this confidence in our wrong ideas, in our incorrect, non-introspective awareness that gets us into a lot of trouble. Hmm? Okay, that was the second one. The third one, of non-introspective awareness is it's the kind that interrupts serenity because the mind is unable to attend alertly to the meditation object. Okay? So you're meditating. And you're totally unaware that you're falling asleep. That ever happened to you? Yeah? You're falling asleep, but you think your mind is clear. You know? It's like, okay, that little thought came, but I'm not following it. I'm having a clear mind. And then suddenly it's like, oh, I was falling asleep. Okay, so that's an example of this one. Okay, so here's the Pali commentaries talks about four types or four aspects of introspective awareness. So these are ones that we want to cultivate, and you can see why they're very helpful. So the first one is introspective awareness of purpose. Okay? We pause before acting to clarify the purpose of our action. Why am I doing this? Is this something that will benefit the other person and benefit me? Okay. I remember when I first went to Koh Phan, there was one monk who was leading the meditation sessions. And whenever you asked him a question, he wouldn't answer it. The words wouldn't come, you know, a split second after you finished your question. There would be a pause, and then he would slowly answer it. Yeah. And I used to think, why is he doing that? You know, just say it. Yeah. But I think what he was doing is being careful. You know, what is the purpose of my speech? Yeah. What's my motivation? What's the content? Who am I speaking to? How are they likely to take what I'm saying? Okay, then the second one is introspective awareness of suitability. So this examines the suitability of the circumstances, okay, and knows how to achieve the determined purpose or goal most effectively in accordance with the Dharma. Okay, so somebody is busy vacuuming that floor, and they're doing it wrong because I have my non-introspective awareness that is aware of the right way of vacuuming and aware that they aren't doing that. And, you know, there they are, they're doing it. So I have the impulse to come to them right away, ask them to turn off the vacuum cleaner, and then teach them how to vacuum properly. Because properly means the way I'm doing it. Yeah. You have to understand that. Okay. So is that a suitable context to stop and tell somebody, you know, make somebody stop and then explain how to do it a different way? Yeah. Maybe when they're just taking the vacuum cleaner out, or, you know, and before they've started, you could say, oh, you know, if you're interested, yeah, I can show you a way to vacuum that I find very efficient. Would you like to learn? And you say that before they start, that's a suitable time to do it. Okay, when they're already in it and they're pushing that thing back and forth and back and forth, yeah, Is that the right time in the middle of it? Probably not. Yeah, probably not, because they're right in the middle and they're focused on getting it done. So then you have to say to yourself, it's okay. It's a big universe. Everybody has their own style of vacuuming. I can live with that. And self-centered thought, if you don't like it, it's all yours. Okay. Yeah. So awareness of the suitability, you know. And to really know the right timing, because you may have a fantastic idea, but if you give it at the wrong time, it could start a quarrel, actually, you know, because the other person isn't ready to take that in at that time. Their mind's focused on something else. Okay, so with this one, we want to have, a beneficial purpose and suitable means to fulfill that purpose. Yeah. Like when I was sitting in the back of that car and her hands are all over, I didn't really have suitable means at that time to fulfill the purpose of saying, you know, would you keep your hands on the wheel? Because it would, you know, it would have started something, and I don't want to start something in the middle of the highway because it's already scary enough. Okay, then the third one is introspective awareness of the domain. So this helps us to keep the mind on the meditation object, and it helps us to bring the mind back to the meditation object when it's gotten distracted. Okay? So during break times, if you're doing a certain meditation in retreat, during the break times, you want to remember that meditation object. It's not just that during the break times you discard it. You want to remember it. So it brings your mind back to that meditation object during the break times. And then the fourth is the introspective awareness of non-ignorance. And this is practiced during the meditation on the four establishments of mindfulness, and it is applied during insight meditation. Okay, so it leads this kind of introspective awareness is together with wisdom, so it leads to peeling away layers of afflictions that prevent us from seeing the body as it actually is, yeah, or the feelings as they are, the mind, the phenomena, okay? For example, some people do not like saying that there's a meditation on seeing the body as foul, yeah? They don't like the word foul because foul means disgusting. Yeah. And they don't want to think that their body is disgusting. Yeah. So, you know, it's hard for them to bring their mind to the actual topic of it because there's some resistance to seeing the body as something unpleasant. And it is disgusting, isn't it? When you really look at what it is. Yeah. But if you've had the body is beautiful and, you know, treat your body well, it will bring you a lot of pleasure. And you've been, you know, heard a lot of that stuff, which was quite popular, you know, for a certain period of time. Yeah, then maybe, you know, the body is foul. No, there's all that. That's one perspective, but let's not be extreme. You know, I was watching the pictures from the Met Gala, and, you know, those people's body was really beautiful. Okay, so some people might think like that. Actually, it's like Halloween. Yeah, if you look at what they wear, you know, you're looking for the Daily News, and what do you have is, you know, the red carpet from the Met Gala. And it's like Halloween, dressing up for Halloween. Okay, so those are four types of introspective awareness. So again, you know, to really remember these and use them. Okay, now here's where we stopped on page. Well, we're going to stop start at the beginning of the section on page 314, the general meaning of introspective awareness. So a sangha describes the general meaning of introspective awareness as a mental factor that is aware of what we are doing and how we are doing it, or how we should do it. So you're aware of how you are cutting the carrots until you realize that you have the knife upside down, and that's why you had to press really hard to cut the carrots. Your introspective awareness wasn't there. Okay, so how to remember what we're doing, how we're doing it, and how we should be doing it. Okay, so there's lots of examples, you know. How should we come to Dharma class? Should we come running at the last minute, panting? Should we come running and looking for our friends so we can start to chat with them? Yeah. No, you know, we should know what our purpose is, know how we're going there and why we're going there, and to prepare our mind for it. Okay. So here, it is not a technical term, introspective awareness, and is used as an adverb, as in acting with awareness or abiding in awareness. A person acting with awareness is paying attention to her actions as well as to the surrounding environment and their relationship to it. So they're aware of their actions, what the environment is, and what is my relationship with the environment. Yeah. So I have to go pee-pee. Is this the time when I walk out of the Dharma class? No. Okay. Because it disturbs people. Yeah. Or this is, I can't remember if I turned off the stove in the kitchen. Well, maybe, yeah, that's a good time to go check. Yeah. But also check beforehand too, next time. Yeah. Okay. So it's a mental factor that is aware of what we are doing and how we are doing it, or how we should do it. Okay. So it's like talking about acting with awareness or abiding in awareness. A person acting with awareness is paying attention to their actions as well as to the surrounding environment and their relationship with it. You know, if I'm sitting in the back row, yeah, maybe it's easy to tiptoe out. If I'm sitting in the front row, getting up and making a big production out of it, that's not going to go over well. Okay. So here's a quote. What is abiding in awareness? Having trained in such a way in staying awake, he now abides with awareness while going and returning, while looking ahead and to the sides, while extending and bending his limbs, while wearing his robes and carrying his outer robes and bowl, while eating and drinking, chewing and tasting, while standing, walking, sitting, or lying down, even while falling asleep, while waking up, talking or being silent, and while removing drowsiness and sleepiness. Okay, so somebody who has introspective awareness, when they're doing any of those things, is aware of what they're doing. Yeah. And then there's the person who you're reading a book, you're watching TV, and you just kind of unconsciously go to the refrigerator, get a snack, bring it back, start eating, and finish it. And then you're surprised that there's a dirty dish there to clean, you know, because you're just very used to, well, whenever that craving for a snack arises, you go get a snack. Yeah. And so, you know, being aware of that kind of thing. And, oh, I just got up. I'm heading towards the refrigerator. Why am I doing that? Oh, I feel like eating. Feel like eating a snack. Okay, a snack isn't feel like eating a meal when I'm hungry. Feel like eating a snack. I don't know, do you have a different feeling when you're having a snack than when you're having a meal? Yeah. Yeah. Snack, just this little thing that, you know, yes, I, you know, want to eat. I'm very involved in studying. You know, and what's it called? You're eating blindly. Yeah. Okay. How many things do we do like that? Yeah. And when you get older, are you doing that more or are you just noticing it more? Yeah. This is an interesting question. Yeah. I knew when I left there to go here that I was going here to get something. And now I'm here, and I can't remember what I came here to get. But I knew I remembered it when I was back there. What happened to it? Yeah. And then the question, well, when I see something back there, do I have to keep saying it over and over in my mind for the 10 minutes between here and there? Okay, yeah. Get the scissors, get the scissors, get the scissors, get a piece of paper, get a piece of paper, you know. And then, of course, when you get to the door and you open the door, that breaks your chain of concentration because now you're carrying, oh, I'm opening the door. Gee, the bugs might get in and the door needs to be painted and, you know, I have to take my shoes off on the other side. And then, oh, why did I come in here? Yeah. Yeah. I'm seeing that some people, what was I talking about? Have the same problem I do. Yes. Remember when you were little and you used to look at your parents and when they were forgetful and go, what's happening to them, you know? And then there you are. Okay. So the passage that I just read, okay. Oh, also here, having introspective awareness when you're silent and when you're speaking. So awareness of when to speak, what's the appropriate thing to say? Yeah, what situation am I in? Who am I speaking to? Because sometimes, you know, something happened and we just feel like I need to tell somebody. Ever have that? Yeah, I just want to, this isn't a big thing, but I just want to tell somebody that it happened. And then the first person you bump into, you start to tell them. And then halfway through that, you go, oh, I should not be talking about this to this person. You know, this is not what they want to hear. It's, you know, going to make them critical or, you know, who knows what. But it's, you're in the middle, and then it's like, no, I should not be saying this right now. Where was my introspective awareness at the beginning? Okay, so the passage that we went through was almost identical to the one that appears in the Pali Sutras, such as the Discourse to Ganaka Moglana. Both of these passages are very similar to a passage in the 25,000-verse Prajnaparamita Sutra. Okay, that describes the bodhisattva practices. So here's the quotation. Yeah, this one, they're talking to Subhuti. It seems like in the previous ones, it didn't mention Subhuti. Poor guy was left out. But yeah, so it says, furthermore, Subhuti, the bodhisattva Mahasattva maintains awareness when he goes from his residence or returns to it. He maintains awareness when looking ahead or looking to the sides. He maintains awareness when bending or extending his leg, foot, arm, or hand. Yeah. That's an interesting one. Are we aware when we extend our hand? Yeah, isn't to shake somebody's hand, we're just meeting them? Is it because they're handing us something? Is this the appropriate person to shake hands with? Yeah, to be aware of that, you know, because in many cultures, you know, it's expected, even though, you know, we're Sangha, to shake people's hands. And they will, you know, their hands are extended, and if we don't shake it, they're going to be upset. Yeah, they'll think that we're being very rude. On the other hand, if you're on an LL flight and you're a nun sitting next to a man, you know, do not extend your hand, because they are not allowed to touch any woman but their wives. In fact, you know, if you're ready to sit down there and the flight attendant comes and says, I'm going to reseat you, it's probably because that man made that request, okay? So that's not the situation to extend your hand. Yeah. Now, some of you may say, you know, when am I ever going to use that bit of information? Well, when I was some years ago teaching in Israel, people told me this. Thank goodness. Yeah, because otherwise I would have stuck my hand out to shake it as a way of being polite, and it would have been offensive to other people. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so you have to know the culture that you're going into. So he maintains awareness when extending or bending his arm, foot, leg, or hand. He maintains awareness when carrying his outer robe, robes, or alms bowl. He maintains, yeah, hold on to whatever it is you're carrying. Yeah? Be aware of where you're moving your hand. This morning, I had a thermos of hot tea that was closed, and I moved my hand like this, and it, you know, I'm sure that I didn't touch it. I'm sure my treatment mother cat must have jumped up at that moment and knocked the bottle over. But anyway, you know, I don't want you to blame her, so yeah, I probably did it. Anyway, I knocked it over, and the bottle leaks, and so there was tea all over the counter. Yeah, it was actually a very useful experiment. It wasn't designed as an experiment, but I learned that that thermos had reached the end of its lifespan. And so you got to do puja for it and pray for its new recycling. Yeah, maybe you could spray paint it gold and use it as a vase. Send it to Donnie, I'm sure he likes gold. Yeah. Okay, so be careful where you're moving stuff. Yeah? Okay, he maintains awareness when eating, chewing, drinking, or tasting. Now this is an interesting one. Yeah, because we all know each other's peculiarities about eating, don't we? Yeah, there's the people who play with their food. And then finally, they take a bite. Then there's the people who inhale their food. And I've eaten half of my bowl and they've had two bowls already. They're bent over and shoveling it in. They don't slurp, they're very polite, but inhaling the food, okay? Then there's the people who hold the chopsticks in the wrong place. Yeah, they hold the chopstick near where the point is, where you pick up the food. You're supposed to hold it way back here, but they can't hold it back there, so it's kind of like here. Okay. So there's so many different kinds of eating. Yeah, and really what some people mix with what, some people perfectly manicure their each bite. You know, we're not supposed to look in others' bowls. I'm not looking at their bowls. I am looking at their chopsticks and their spoons. Yeah, and it's like, okay, I want one part of that leaf, two drops of that sauce, a little bit of this one, and a little bit more of that one. And then I got to get it all on one spoon. Yeah? Okay. Yeah, just as it is, everybody has their own way of chanting before. Yeah, some people sit up straight when they're chanting at the mealtime. Yeah, perfect. Yeah, back straight. Perfect meditation. Yeah. Then there's the people, who you're chanting. What's the verse, you know? Yeah. So you're checking out everybody else and how they're chanting, you know, whose eyes are closed, who's doing what while they're chanting. You know, you're supervising. Of course, you're not focusing on what you're saying because you're busy checking out what everybody else is doing. Yeah, so your eyes are open. Then there's the people, yeah, who are... Namo, just whatever I'm supposed to be saying. Yeah, we have different ways of chanting, don't we? So why did I get off on that topic? Awareness when eating, chewing, drinking, or tasting. So that person is totally not watching how they're eating, but they're very mindful of how everybody else is eating. Yeah. And who takes what, you know? I kind of know who, you know, you have an idea of what almost everybody takes. Yeah. Almost, not really. Somebody's bowls are full, somebody's bowls are very empty. Some people, I can't even look in your bowl. I try and look in her bowl, it's like, is there any food in this? Oh, yeah, there's like a little bit at the bottom. I finally saw it. Yeah? Right? Yeah, she's one of those overeating people. Yeah. She is over the eating. Yeah. So doesn't bother with it. Yeah. And then there's other people, you know, their bowls are full. And then there's people who eat their dessert first. We know who those people are. I won't reveal them. Yeah. But we know. We know, don't you? Yeah. This would be a really good thing to do, you know, having a game show with these kind of questions. Okay. Yeah, very good awareness of what other people are doing. Okay, he maintains awareness when sleeping or dispelling drowsiness. He maintains awareness when going, coming, standing, sitting, lying down, waking up, speaking, being silent, or retiring in order to practice meditation. Okay. Are we aware when we're standing? Are we aware of when to bow? Are we aware of how to put our hands when we're bowing? Yeah, there's a lot to be aware of. Are we aware of the visualization? O Subhuti, thus does the Bodhisattva Mahasattva, one who practices the perfection of wisdom, dwell watching the body in relation to the inner body. Inner body is, you know, your muscles and everything, what you're doing. Moreover, he does not form deliberative thoughts associated with the body. Oh, you mean I can't comment on my body? I'm paying attention to it. God, how did I get so many freckles? And my skin really looks like my grandma's. Okay, what am I doing? You know? He does not form deliberative thoughts associated with the body on account of his not apprehending an inherently existent body. Aha. You mean if I didn't see my body as inherently existent, I wouldn't care about how many freckles and how my fingernails are splitting? Yeah, that's another wonderful thing that comes with aging. Your fingernails split. Do your fingernails split? No, no, no. Yes, no, no, no. Oh, we are just sisters and having fingernails that fall apart. Yeah. In the good old days, our fingernails used to be strong, but now, just you wait, some of you. Then you'll know what she and I go through. Yeah. Okay. Thus, Subhuti, does the Bodhisattva Mahasattva, one who practices the perfection of wisdom, dwell watching the body in relation to the inner body. Moreover, he does not form deliberative thoughts associated with the body on account of his not apprehending an inherently existent body. He is ardent, introspectively aware, mindful, having removed longing and displeasure for the world. So somebody here in the perfection of wisdom, yeah, has some understanding of emptiness and has removed or at least dampened their longing and displeasure for the world. So longing for the world, we want the pleasures of the world. Yeah, displeasure with the world, all of our complaints. So the Buddha recommends that bodhisattvas practice awareness in the four physical positions and during all activities, be they mundane, such as dressing, conversing, or eating, or feeding the cat, or taking the cat for a walk. Yeah. Or petting the cats, or wondering where the cat is, because they haven't come to see you for a while. You know? Okay. They are mindful when they're doing specific Dharma activities, such as teaching the Dharma or meditating. You need to be mindful then, otherwise you're really out to lunch, you know. Asanga explains the meaning of abiding in awareness while going out and returning, activities found in all three passages above. Yeah, when you go out from someplace, when you return. We're always going out and returning, yeah? So here's what Asanga says. Concerning abiding in awareness, while going, he fully knows I am going. While returning, he fully knows I am returning. He fully knows here I should go, here I should not go. He fully knows now I should go, now I should not go. This is what is called awareness. Wow! How aware are we when we're going or coming back of why, where we're going, why we're going there, if we should be going there? Or again, is there just that impulse in our mind, I want to go here, and you get up and go? Yeah. All the times when we act on impulse, yeah, when we're acting spontaneously, yeah, remember when the big word was be spontaneous. Don't be all stiff and programmed. Be spontaneous. And, you know, so I have a spontaneous wish to, you know, go run down Country Lane. Yeah, even though it's time for me to be in here doing something. Yeah, I have, you know, the impulse to tell somebody about, you know, this incredible tale of what happened 15 years ago that they're going to fall asleep listening to. But I feel like telling it. You know, so, you know, just how often we just act on impulse and we're not even aware of it. Yeah. Oh, here's somebody I don't like. What could I do? You don't even pause to think. You just, you know what they don't like. Yeah, so you kind of, you know, they're walking up the stairs, so you tromp up and make a lot of noise behind them, or you walk faster and you overtake them, or, you know, who knows what. Yeah, and we just do it on impulse, without really thinking. Or we don't like somebody, so we just see them, and automatically our face goes. Yeah? And the other person said, why are you making a face at me? I'm not making a face at you. No, totally unaware. Okay. This is more a sangha. If he possesses such awareness, while going, he fully knows I am going. He only goes where he should go. He only goes when he should go. And he only goes as he should go, in the right manner. That's a lot to be aware of. Yeah, they know where you're going, where you should go at this time. They go only where they should be going. And they only go there with the proper manner, the proper demeanor, and a good motivation. And they're aware of all of that. This is what is called abiding in awareness regarding going and returning. Okay. So in short, the general meaning of introspective awareness is to know what we are doing, when we're doing it, and to know how to do it in an appropriate way. When driving a car, we clearly know what we're doing or should know what we're doing and are When driving a car, we clearly know what we are doing and are not preoccupied with thoughts or worries or with texting. Yeah, I was also in a car on this trip. Can't remember, towards the end of the trip, and somebody was starting to text.
While they were driving?
What?
While driving?
Yeah. Yes. And that time I said something. Yeah. Yeah. We know where it is suitable for us to go, when to go there. Okay. And how to go there. Before turning the car key, we clearly know our destination and the direction to get there. Oh, but some people, they start out, they think they know where they're going, and then after a while, they decide they should turn have Siri tell them where to go, or turn, you know, their phone on. Okay. Oh, don't you love riding in a car with somebody who doesn't like to admit they don't know where they're going? And who drives around because they're sure they know that it's coming up. Yeah. Yeah. I remember a time doing that many years ago. Yeah, somebody picked me up at the airport. I was so tired. And they drove around. I'm sure it's in this neighborhood. Okay. So before turning the car key, we clearly know our destination and the directions to get there. We know if our destination is an appropriate place for us to go. For example, if someone is trying to be sober, it is not wise to meet friends at the bar or visit friends who like to take drugs. Clear. If you're a monastic, is it just that you become aware of those things if you want to be sober? If you're a monastic, yeah, should you be going to the bar? Should you be going to the ice cream parlor? You know, in what circumstances? Yeah, go to the bar. Are there any good circumstances when you should be going to the bar?
You gave a talk in the bar 2 years ago.
Yeah. Was that remark said with introspective awareness and mindfulness?
They weren't serving any alcohol, though. They kind of closed down the alcohol setting part when you gave the talk.
Where were we? Yeah, we went into some place.
What's the name of that place?
Yeah.
The very fancy club in Singapore that closed down.
Oh, God, yes, yeah. That one.
But they weren't selling alcohol. We had a deal with them that they wouldn't sell alcohol.
Yeah, but
still,
it,
the bottles
it looked
were.
Like a bar. Yeah. But there was some place where we went on this trip, too. We walked in and the person we were with wanted to sit down somewhere, but there was a bar in front. Yeah, I can't remember where it was, but it was somewhere. Okay. So, you know, it's like you're a monastic. Where should you go? Where shouldn't you go? Where were we? Yeah. We are aware of the appropriate time to do things. Yeah, when our friend is busy or when we have many tasks to do, is it wise to have a long conversation with that friend, or it is wise to have a long conversation with that friend later? Yeah, to not stop them when they're in the middle of doing something. We are aware of how we are doing something. What is the tone of our voice? What is interrupting the other person? Are we listening with attention and empathy to what they're saying? Being aware of what, where, when, how, and why we are acting in our daily life will facilitate our interaction with others, improve our relationships, and prevent us from acting or speaking in ways that we will later regret. Yeah. Yeah, so, how many times have we started a discussion with somebody and then realized that we're using the wrong volume of our voice or the wrong tone of voice? Yeah, or certain words that, you know, don't fit the occasion. Okay. Okay. In another passage, a Sangha discusses lying down, presumably to sleep. So here's what he says. How does one lie in bed with awareness? Finally, I'm exhausted. Yeah? Is that how you lie in bed at night? Just like collapse? Or do you daintily sit down and lift the covers up, push the covers back so they're in the right position, you know, just like if you had a maid or a butler, they would, you know, do that. So you do that for yourself. Yeah. Okay. Or do you jump into bed? Yeah. Do you sit and then swivel your legs around? Yeah. Do you lie on your stomach? Do you lie on your back? It's not good to sleep on your stomach. Yeah, this is not a a good habit to be into, physically and also because of what it, just the way it interacts with your mind. Yeah. Okay, that's why the Buddha encouraged us to sleep on our right side like this. Yeah, which works really well until you have a hip replacement on that side. And then you have to find another place, another position. Okay. So here's a sangha. How does one lie in bed with awareness? When the mind of the person lying down with mindfulness is disturbed by one affliction or another, he knows this disturbance fully. He does not indulge in it. He abandons it. He penetrates it, and he turns away from this thought. Therefore, it is called lying in bed while abiding in awareness. So how many times when you lie down to go to sleep, what's the thought that comes in your mind? Are you still thinking about something that happened during the day that you're irritated at? Or maybe remembering a conversation where now you're saying, oh, I should have said that, or I shouldn't have said that. Or are you thinking, oh, I didn't get my whole list done. I'm going to have to tomorrow morning, first thing I have to do this, that. Yeah. So are we, when we lie down, are we lying down with a clear mind or with some kind of distraction or irritation or desire, you know, in our mind? So something to be aware of, yeah, because that will influence, you know, if we're lying down and there's a strong affliction in the mind, that's one reason why we can't fall asleep. Yeah, so if you're having trouble fall asleep, check what kind of thought is going on in the mind when you lie down, because that can really make a problem. Yeah, and then it influences what you dream about, and it influences how you wake up, too. If you go to bed angry, your dreams are usually angry, and you wake up still angry. Yeah. Okay, so here, introspective awareness monitors the mind for afflictions, and should one arise, it detects the affliction and prevents it from overwhelming the mind. So he's talking about, you know, when you're lying down. Yeah. Introspective awareness propels the application of an antidote, such as reviewing the affliction as false and empty to counteract it. Should anger arise, introspective awareness knows this, and without allowing the mind to get lost in vicious thoughts, it turns the mind to meditation on love. Yeah, it's actually very nice, you know, when you first get into bed, to think loving thoughts about people, to really just consciously do that. And I know I started doing my own version of this many years ago after I read a newspaper article. This was when there was war going on in Afghanistan, and many people had to flee from their villages and were going to other places to, you know, into the city or somewhere else to sleep. And it was a really cold winter, and so some children were freezing, almost freezing to death. And so I thought of, wow, you know, what is it like to be a parent in really cold weather and you have an infant, you know, and you have to keep the infant right next to your body because that's the only way the infant is going to survive the night, even while you yourself are cold. Yeah. And so I began, you know, when I'm lying down, to think of all the people who are cold at night and wish them to be warm. And then the people who are really hot at night, monsoons are coming up, wishing them coolness. People who are grieving at night and wishing them peace. Yeah. And so, you know, I somehow got into that kind of habit when I just lie down of thinking of all the other people who are lying in bed now. I'm comfortable, I'm peaceful, you know, there's nothing horrible going on in my life. And thinking of all the other people who don't have that situation, and then deliberately kind of wishing, sending that to them. Yeah. And so it's a nice way to end the day. It's like when we do the chanting with the bell and the drum, you know, those dedication verses are such a nice way to end the day. Yeah, to really thinking about something virtuous as you're ending it. Yeah. Okay. Should anger arise, introspective awareness knows this, and without allowing the mind to get lost in vicious thoughts, it turns the mind to meditation on love. This is similar to how introspective awareness functions when developing concentration. In short, as Sangha says, how can one be restrained in one's body and speech? That's the question, the answer, by possessing introspective awareness. And Shantideva agrees. He says, in brief, this alone is the definition of introspective awareness, the repeated examination of the state and actions of our body and mind. Okay, let's do one more paragraph. Can you make it through one more paragraph? Yeah. Then we'll stop. In engaging in the Bodhisattva's deeds, Shantideva devotes an entire chapter to introspective awareness. It is a delight to read, and I strongly encourage you to do so. This is in an empathic way that confronts our denial and avoidance. Shantideva describes the disadvantages of the afflictions and encourages us to act with introspective awareness at all times to prevent them from arising and to counteract them if we do. He also gives practical advice on how to move our body, speak to others, and watch over our mind, which is the source of verbal and physical actions. If we want to attain awakening and be of benefit to others, mindfulness and introspective awareness are essential. So there's one chapter, I think it's this one, where Shantideva says, if you're about to, for example, speak harsh words, yeah, be like a log. There's all this, you know, advice to be like a log. And so we think, oh, be like a log? That means just shutting down and, you know, being rude. He's not talking being like that, you know. A log doesn't have opinions. Yeah, a log doesn't need to put its two cents in everything. A log doesn't need to, you know, intervene in all the situations that we intervene in. Okay. Yeah. Shantideva also speaks of mindfulness and introspective awareness in the context of maintaining the Bodhisattva precepts. Having cultivated conscientiousness, we must develop mindfulness and introspective awareness in order to maintain the Bodhisattva precepts. So conscientiousness is a mental factor that values our ethical conduct. So it's really important to value our ethical conduct. If we don't value it, mindfulness and introspective awareness are useless, and anyway, we won't have them because we don't care. So it's important to have to care about our own ethical conduct. Having cultivated conscientiousness, we must develop mindfulness and introspective awareness in order to maintain the bodhisattva precepts. Mindfulness remembers the essential points of the bodhisattva ethical code. And what's the essential point of the bodhisattva ethical code?
No harm
and
benefiting others.
So remember that. It also helps us remember the essential points of the bodhisattva ethical code, and we have the introspective awareness that monitors the body, speech, and mind to present their being under the control of afflictions and to ensure compassion is present. When introspective awareness is absent, afflictions arise, and when it is present, the practice of the six perfections increases. So sometimes we start something out with a good motivation, and then in the middle we forget our mindfulness and introspective awareness, and then our motivation changes, you know, and we're doing something out of self-interest instead. So we need to maintain these mental factors throughout whatever action we're doing. So, anybody have questions? Or are you all wanting to go to sleep? Or wake up from your nap? Nothing? Yeah.
I enjoy listening to these lists of being mindful, but I also, in my own experience, would think that I would have to be doing a lot of mindfulness meditation to have that kind
of...
I would have to have a lot of mindfulness meditation practice every day to maintain that kind of mindfulness.
Yeah. Well, the thing is developing a habit with mindfulness. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then it becomes more habitual. Yeah. So of reminding, you know, we would start, like when we leave tonight, reminding ourselves to be mindful of what we're doing between now and when we get back to our room or wherever you're going. And then, you know, when you get there, see if you remember to check up if you were mindful or not. I mean, you don't have to do sitting mindfulness meditation. You just have to keep, you know, generate mindfulness and introspective awareness during the day and remember to do it. And of course, at the beginning, we're going to forget a lot and then keep coming back to it. Yeah. Not mindfulness of the people we're mad at. Not mindfulness of everything they did wrong. Yeah. But the keeping the focus on our body, speech, and mind. Mm-hmm.
I do think that this is a really important personal awareness that, I mean, automatic, being on automatic, and how much of life is like that, yeah, due to familiarity. And so when I look over my life, even in this precious life, or how much of it I miss because I'm on automatic.
Yeah.
That I'm not enjoying the virtue of others. I'm not respecting the environment in which I live, the property of the sangha of which we are offered, because I'm on automatic. And the habit is so deep. So when I catch myself in the moment where I'm not, life totally opens into another whole experience.
Yeah.
You know, you can really see precious human life for what it's really meant to mean.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it's a hard thing to remember to do.
It's true. Yeah. We take our precious human life for granted, and we operate on automatic.
I'm just kind of thinking, like, sometimes people want to be on automatic because they don't want to know what's going on in their mind. So I was just wondering if you, it seems to me, and I'm just wondering if you have any experience of this, but it just seems to me that the more comfortable you are with yourself, the easier it is to be mindful, because you're not, you don't have any urge to suppress or to, you know, really, you know, we do go on automatic sometimes because we don't want to feel, or we don't want to think, or we, you know, it's a strategy that's not good for us, but it happens. I just wonder if you have thoughts about that.
Yeah, we often go on automatic in order to avoid ourselves. Yeah, avoid certain thoughts or moods or situations. Yep, or feelings. So it needs some courage, yeah, some fortitude to be able to sometimes just be aware of our feelings, if they're unpleasant feelings, instead of jumping in and exacerbating them, to just be aware and, you know, this isn't going to last forever. Yeah. Okay, let's dedicate.